Good morning. This is lectionary at, well, I guess I suppose it's actually lectionary at breakfast today because I'm recording this early due to a convocation that we have on campus over lunch today, so I'm sitting here by myself. But greetings to you. We're looking today at Luke chapter 4, verses 16 through 30, a bit of a lengthy account, but Luke 4, 16 to 30. We're in the season of Epiphany, the third week. And relatively early, of course, in Epiphany, although it seems rather short this year. But a pretty key pericope in the Gospel of Luke, and an appropriate one for Epiphany, because it highlights the reaction to the bringing of the light, to use the theme of Epiphany. What happens when the light shines in the world, to use John's language? And as we see in this pericope, there are both positive and negative reactions to the coming of Jesus into the world. And as you'll see here, if you're going to preach on Luke 4, you will probably have to pick either one or the other of the reactions. Or I suppose you can make that the theme of your sermon, two different reactions. But we'll walk through the text, and we've been getting used to Luke a little bit here. In Series C, we'll see some nice Lucanisms as we go through here, and very different style from what we saw in Mark, of course, in Series B. Well, in any case, Luke 4:16. I should say immediately preceding this, of course, is his baptism, and this is the inaugural event of Jesus' ministry, his first public preaching. And it happens in his hometown. Now, we do find out in verse 23 that he had been doing things elsewhere. It's just that Luke doesn't record them. They are recorded in Mark. Mark talks about a Capernaum ministry, but Luke does not. He begins Jesus' ministry in Nazareth. Well, in any case, verse 16. Kai elthen eis Nazara, hu ein tethramnos. And he came into Nazareth, which we heard about earlier, hometown of Joseph and Mary. Who there, the relative pronoun, it's not the negative particle because you have the rough breathing. Who with an imperfect plus a middle participle, middle aorist participle. Now that middle participle is a strange form. It's actually from trefo, which means to feed or to eat. You see, the menos gives you the middle termination. You lose the augment because it's a participle, and the whole stem changes. It's an odd stem, trefo, trepso. Anyway, aorist middle form here, and the periphrastic imperfect, right, where he was fed, nursed maybe is the way you might want to translate that, where he was nursed, where he was raised, as I think how most translations do that. The who, the genitive relative pronoun, is referring back to Nazareth, and it's a genitive of place. So you have to render this something like where he was raised, and probably even with the periphrastic participle, with the form of ain there, going back a step, where he had been raised. Right? Kai eselthen kata ta eothos auto en te hemera ton sabaton. Estein synagogain kai aneste anagononai. All right. And he came from Iserchomai, aorist form there. He came. Now, kata ta aiothos is a really weird form. I actually kind of spent a little time looking this up. The form there, aiothos, is a participle form from apparently the verb etho, which is an archaic form. It doesn't exist anymore. It's not used anymore by the time of the New Testament. Different grammars kind of explain the stem differently. You notice you have epsilon iota, so you have some kind of an augment going on. So epsilon can't stand together, so epsilon turns into epsilon iota. And most grammars, in fact, the grammars I looked up identified this as a pluperfect because of the reduplication, apparently. I checked a computer program which identified this as a perfect, so take your pick. I really don't know. And apparently the computer doesn't know either. I trust the books rather than the computer, by the way. The form here, kata to aiothos, occurs twice. I think the other one is in, I want to say, Acts. And then the indicative form, aiothe, occurs in Matthew and Mark, I believe it is. And it only occurs four times in the New Testament. And odd form, archaic, it must be some kind of an idiom here, but according to his custom is what you have here, or according to his practice. There you go. And according to the practice to him, so the dative there is functioning possessively, according to his custom. On the day of the Sabbath, now here we have this usage in the New Testament where sabbaton in the plural refers to the day of the Sabbath. Another idiomatic phrase. So in the day of the Sabbath, he came, eistein synagogain, into the synagogue, and got up, aneste, from anestemi, anagnonai, infinitive, in order to read. Now we'll talk about the logistics of this after verse 17. Kai epidothe auto biblion to prophetu esaiu, kai anaptidothe, I'm sorry, skipping a line, anaptuxas ta biblion huron tantapon hu en gegramenon. All right, so was given to him the scroll. A biblion is a piece of a strip of papyrus, parchment, scroll rolled up. Anaptuxas, for an anatupto, is the verb to unroll. So he unrolls the scroll, because that's what you have to do with scrolls. You can't flip pages. He unrolls the scroll of the prophet Isaiah. Keep in mind, of course, that at this point you don't have a book of the Bible, or I should say a book of called the Bible with individual writings bound together into it. You have individual scrolls of individual writings. So you have one scroll for Isaiah, one scroll for Genesis, one scroll for Ezekiel. You know, take your pick. So he was given a scroll to prophet Isaiah. What's probably going on here is Jesus, and this is apparently normal practice in synagogues, you don't have a parallel to modern churches where you have one pastor who's kind of appointed the teacher in the public setting. In synagogue practice, you had an archeus synagoge, a ruler of the synagogue who kind of oversaw the arrangements, arranged for teachers, made sure provision was made for the writings, the scriptures, things like that. And so the Archeus Synagoge is probably the guy who gives Jesus the scroll. And given that Jesus is known, apparently, as you know from verse 23, probably Jesus was invited to do this. He's been going around doing some teaching things, and now they want him to do some teaching in his hometown. It's his home synagogue. All right, it's your turn, Jesus. He's come back home, and he's taking his turn at the synagogue. Okay. Now, whether Jesus intentionally picked Isaiah, or this was part of some kind of lectionary system, you know, who knows? It doesn't matter. The point is, he reads Isaiah. In any case, he finds the place where it was written, and here you have the exact same paraphrastic you saw in verse 16, the genitive who, the imperfect, plus the middle aorist participle. So where it had been and still was written. All right. Now, the content is the key here, obviously, verse 18. And because the Septuagint in poetry, it's a bit choppy. Pneuma kariu epime, hu eniken ekrisen me, oin galisasthai ptakois, apestoken me, keruxai ekmalatois, afesin, kai teflois, anablipsin, apostolai, tethrosmenus, and afese, ke ruxe, and yaton, kiriu, dekton. All right. Starts off easy enough. Spirit of Yahweh. Jesus would be reading Hebrew at this point. Spirit of Yahweh is upon me. Because who? He has anointed me. Now, Anakin here with the who. Anakin is an improper preposition. You see Anika occasionally. Improper prepositions follow the word that they are governing. So Anika or Anakin, or here Anakin, probably an older form because of the Septuagint usage here. is governing the who, and it means because of, or for the sake of, on account of, something like that. So because of the fact that, who, he creoed, here the aorist, he anointed me. So immediately you have messianic overtones going on, not only because it's the verb creo, but because you're in Isaiah 61, obviously. He anointed me, why? And then you have an infinitive, in order to announce good news to poor ones. And what Jesus is going to list here from Isaiah are groups that are marginalized, kept on the fringes of Jewish society in the first century. So he anointed me to bring good news to the poor. Next verb is sort of repeating things. Apostello, here again the aorist tense. He sent me to proclaim officin, release to those who are captive. Aikmalotes here, interesting word. Is it captive meaning, you know, prisoners, or is it captive meaning those who are under debt? Because you have the context of the year of the Lord's favor here, it might be a jubilee year, or those who have debts are freed from their debts. So it might be more in line with reference to poor than it is to prisoners, you know, politically or something like this. Certainly not criminals. All right, what else? To preach, again, release to the debtors. To the blind, anablepsin, great verb here. Blepo, seeing, ana, again, to proclaim seeing again to blind people. So reopening eyes for blind people. So, again, stuff he does, obviously, in his ministry. And then another infinitive, to send into release those who are, and here's another interesting verb from thrao, tethrausmenos, those who are, and you can do several things, is broken down, oppressed, beat upon. You know, again, the verb is rather ambiguous here. The participle is a bit ambiguous. In any case, you have four groups, you know, poor, somehow under some obligation, which is unjust, debtors, blind people, and those who are in some way oppressed or broken down or beat upon. And finally, to proclaim, kerixai, same verb again, infinitive, to proclaim, eniaton kerio, dekton. Now, dekton is obviously modifying the accusative, eniaton, to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord, or the appropriate year of the Lord, or the year of the Lord's favor is usually how that has to go. What you have here is a little bit of a catena. In verse 18, you have, starting off, as you see in your Nestle text margin, Isaiah 61:1, and then it kind of continues on a little bit into verse 2. The last line is from Isaiah 61, verse 2, but the line preceding, as you see in the margin, is from Isaiah 58. So, you know, an interesting question, did Jesus actually read a little bit more text and Luke is giving us sort of the highlights, or did Jesus pick and choose? It kind of doesn't really matter. In any case, the content of this is critical. The anointed one who does things for those who have been oppressed. What does Jesus do with the passage? In the synagogue at this point, the one who is invited to teach, after having read the text, the scripture, would sit down in the chair and offer the teaching. So exactly what Jesus does. Kai putixas, to biblion, apodus, to huperete, ekathesin. So closing the book, exact opposite of what he did earlier. Earlier he anaptixas it. Now he closes the scroll, or rolls up the scroll, giving it another aorist participle to the attendant. He sat. Kai panton hoi aphthalmoi en te synagoge eson atenidzem tes auto. And Luke plays around with the word order a bit here. The eyes of all, and panton is probably put first here for the sake of emphasis. Everybody was listening. All right. The eyes of all in the synagogue another periphrastic participle, eison, imperfect, with the here present tense, were remaining fastened on him, kept on being fastened on him. Their eyes were glued to him. 21, shift in subject, so you have a de, erxeta de legein, pros autus. He began to say to them, or he started to say to them, hati, that, content, samaron, peplerati, he graphe, haute, en tois, asin, humon. This day, peplerati, perfect from plerao, this day, passive, is fulfilled, this scripture, in your ears. Notice the specificity here. This day, this scripture, your ears. There can be no doubt among those who were there that Jesus sees himself as the one upon whom the Spirit of the Lord is, the one who has been anointed, and the one who will announce God's working now in the world. God's kingdom will now be revealed in all its glory, as had been promised by the prophets. And Jesus is the one anointed, set apart to bring it. Now, what's interesting is the reaction. All right, verse 22. Kai Pontus, emar turun auto, kai ethalmazon epitois logois, tes caritas, tois ek porumenois, ek tu stomatos atu, kai elegon. I should have stopped earlier. Everyone, and this is a weird verb here, martireo usually means to testify to give witness to. Everyone testified to him. Sort of doesn't really suit the context. In the next clause, you have they marveled at the words of grace, the ones which were participle coming out from his mouth. So there must be some sort of positive thing here. Maybe it's something like everyone marked this. Everyone got the point, is kind of what's going on. And they marveled at the words of grace that were coming from his mouth, and they kept on saying elegon in perfect tense, probably a durative idea here or a repetition. Uke huyas estin yosef hutas. Uke, you have the negative placed at the beginning, expecting a positive answer to the question. Is not this guy, hutas, and now a predicate, the son of Joseph? Is not this one the son of Joseph? Notice again, they get the point of the specificity. This guy is making a claim to be the guy prophesied by Isaiah. So how can it be that he is the one sent by Yahweh? How is it that the Spirit of the Lord is on the son of Joseph? Makes no sense. Now, we have a bit of a shift. Instead of marveling in verse 22, Jesus turns it around and initiates the section of conflict or rejection in this pericope. So a bit of a different tone. 23, kai epen pros autus, and he says to them, pantos eretemu moi, tain parabolein tautain. Pantos here, an adverb. You see the omega sigma ending. Welly, or properly, appropriately, something like that. Appropriately, you will speak to me. Here the future from Lego Arrow. You will speak to me this parable. And here, parable isn't in our sort of common usage of a story parable, but a aphorism, a truism, something like this, a pithy saying. So, yatra, physician, here the vocative form, physician, and now some imperatives. Therapoison se'auton. Even sounds good. Therapoison se'auton. Heal yourself. Right? And yourself here is probably the things of yourself, that is, the people you know, those around you, not just, you know, fix yourself for your own sake, but fix the things associated with you, heal the things associated with you. Hassa, and here's again this report they heard, hassa ekusamin genomina estein kafarnaum, Poiesan kai hoda ente patride su. Whatever we heard happened in Capernaum. Now another imperative. Poiesan kai hoda do also here ente patride su, in your hometown. So why are you running around, Jesus, doing all this great stuff elsewhere, and here all you're doing is giving us this, you know, bizarre exegesis of Isaiah, right? Why don't we get the benefits that you are claiming to have? Right? They want what Jesus has to offer, apparently. And it's got a bit of a negative cast to it, because apparently he's not doing it in his hometown. This is going to set up, of course, much of the rest of Luke until he gets to Jerusalem. So it's Jesus' response, verse 24. Epen de, he says, Amen lego humin hate udes prophetes dectas esten ente patride autu. Truly I say to you that no one prophet, no prophet is dectas, there's acceptable, same as we had decton in verse 19. No prophet is acceptable in his hometown. Right? So you wouldn't even accept me if I did it. 25, apaletheos de lego humin, right? Truly I say to you, a little different form there, epi with the aletheia, the dative, sorry, with the genitive. Truly I say to you, palai, and now he's going to correlate his ministry to the ministry of the prophets in the Old Testament. Palai, kerai, eson, entais, himerais, eliu, ente, Israel. There were... many widows, Eson, Palai, Karai. There are many widows in the days of Elijah. You don't have a J in Greek, so you just have to kind of fill one in English. In the days of Elijah in Israel, Hata Ekklesi, Ha Urnas, Epe Ete Tria, Kai Menas Hex. When the heavens, Ekklesi is the aorist passive from Clio, or Cleo, when the heavens were locked up, and here epidative of time, for 3 years and 6 months, sorry, genitive of time, get myself all goofed up here, going a little too fast, I guess, 3 years and 6 months, so he's referring back to the story in the First Kings, as you see in the margin there. When it happened, hosa geneta lemos megas epipasan tain gain. When it happened that a great famine was, or how it happened, how a great famine happened, sorry, upon all the land, or all the region. Kaipras, Udamian, Auton, Epemphe, Elias, Emeis, Sarapta, Te Sidonias, Prasgenaika, Keron. And to no one of them, right, of the Israel, right, Elijah in Israel, to no one of them, was Elijah sent, Pempo, aorist passive, except, or only, you might even say here, to Sarepta in Greek, Zarephath is how our English translations take this, Zarephath of Sidon, in case you don't know where it is, it's not in Israel, to a woman, and then Keron, in a positive, another accusative, a woman, comma, a widow, a woman who was a widow. 27. Let me give you another example. Kai poloi leproi eson ento Israel epe eli or elisayu tu prophetu, right? And there were, same word order here, many lepers in Israel at the time of, and I gotta, he just kind of elides the ente semerais and just uses epi with the genitive, at the time of Elijah the prophet, Elisha the prophet, you got the sigma in there. Kai udes auton ekatharisthe eme naiman ha siras. And no one of them were cleansed, katharidzo, another aorist passive, except Naaman the Syrian. So now we're in 2 Kings, as you see in the margin. The whole, you know, Pharpar, Arbana, rivers, you know, where he's cleansed of leprosy. Excellent, great story. Anyway. Kai udes auton ekatharisthe. Oh, sorry, I did that. Kai eplestheson, verse 28, pantes demu ente synagoge akuantes tauta. So now we get a shift. In 23, they were all marveling at his words of grace. And now, Pontus Eplaisthason, they were all pimplemied, great verb, pimplemied, filled, thamu is a genitive of content. Well, it goes with pimplemi. What are you filled with? You're filled with, here, a genitive, wrath. And everyone was filled with wrath, having heard these things in the synagogue. Well, ente synagogue goes with Pontus. So everyone in the synagogue was filled with wrath, having heard these things, aorist participle. 29. Kai anastantis ex ebelon auton exe tes palaos, kai egagon auton haos afruos to uros f hu he palis akadometo auton hosta kata, now this is a messed up one, kata kremnisai auton. You're not going to see that one again. All right. So anyway, getting up, they cast him outside of the city, or they dragged him, you might say, outside of the city. Hegemai, they led him, Egagon, up to the pinnacle of a mountain, or the cliff of a mountain, the high peak of a mountain, something like this. For it's the pinnacle of a hill, a mountain, cliff. F who, upon which, F is an elided form of epi. When you have a rough breathing who following, that elides to a phi. So F who, upon which the city, and here's a great word, akadometa. You see the second secondary endings and the omega with the iota subscript. What you have going on here is a pluperfect, and the augment, the epsilon, doesn't work. You can't have epsilon, omicron, iota together from the verb oikodemeo, so that changes into an omega plus the iota subscript. So upon which the city had been built. Their city had been built. And here hosta is kind of odd. Hosta plus the infinitive. Usually hosta is used with a subjunctive to indicate result, with the result that they would cast him off the cliff. We'll talk about that in a second. That's a very unusual usage, and as you might expect, a lot of manuscripts smooth out the grammar. If you see in your apparatus, the later manuscripts, the Byzantine text, etc., switches the hosta out for an asta in order to cast him down from a cliff. You have verbs for just about everything in Greek, and they have a verb for casting somebody off a cliff. Kata kremnidzo, right? Just like they have verbs for unroofing a roof, apostegamai, they have casting people off cliffs. You got a verb for that. Huh, they can make a commercial. Got an app for that? Got a verb for that? Anyway, they wanted to cast him off the cliff. Verse 30, but he, de-erkomaiing, another participle, but he, the de indicates a shift in subject, grammatical subject, but he, going through de-erkomaiing dia-mezo, going through the midst of them, and here an imperfect form to end the pericope, went away, kept on going away, kept on walking away. Fades off into the distance as he's walking away from them with the imperfect tense. All right, so a few weird forms there. What do you do with the theme and the preaching here? There's a couple directions you could do. First, in the narrative of Luke, this pericope is functioning, again, to introduce the Galilean ministry all the way, ultimately, to his rejection on the cross. When people respond to Jesus, you have, on the one hand, great things, healings, release of people who are oppressed, marveling at his teaching. But at the same time, you have rejection of him, especially by those who are of Israel. So the religious leaders will reject him, his kinsmen will reject him, his race will reject him, and Gentiles will get it. And this is exactly the same as what God had wanted from the beginning, that there would be a light to the nations, and that what God has done all along through his prophets, through Elijah and Elisha, when the Gentiles received the blessing of the kingdom, and not the Jews. So you have that run to make with it, acceptance and rejecting of Jesus. You could also simply stick with maybe the first half of the pericope and preach on Jesus as fulfillment. I suppose we've done this a lot through Advent and the Christmas time. But here, the fulfillment is now focused on the action of Jesus. And I think we often kind of ignore in our preaching this aspect of Jesus' work. We basically short-circuit Jesus' work into, well, he had to be incarnate so he could be a human, so he could die for us and rise, and that's the work of Jesus. But it's pretty obvious from the narrative of the Gospels and from Jesus' own statements that he views his work much more broadly than that, that Jesus is not only coming in order to release from sin and bring about new creation by his resurrection. He is also coming to bring that new creation into the present by his own presence, by his own ministry. And so what the reign of God looks like on the last day in the new creation looks an awful lot like what he is doing now in his ministry, that blind people see, that poor people hear good news, that those who are cut off and oppressed are freed from their bondage, whether that's, and fair to say, in the new creation, political, economic, social, right? On the last day, that all that oppression will end. Jesus is claiming that that oppression is ending now in his ministry. Not only release from sin, but release from everything which is not the reign of God. Again, we don't often, I think, talk about this in our preaching or see this as part of the work of Jesus, but it does have implications. You know, what is the work of the church? The work of the church is to, well, live in the reign of God, to do the same reign of God that Jesus did. And what does that include? Yes, it includes preaching good news. And we do that week after week, as well we should. But it also includes release. Those who have been oppressed are freed. And sometimes God works through us in order to make it happen even now, just as he will make it happen finally and completely on the last day. Well, I'll let you figure out what to do with that. Blessings on your preaching and your service of the word.